love about Ireland, you know. Coming to Carrickhole. Not...
That's quite a different sound from a coal bucket to a poem, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. Oh, they both rattle along.
I'm a book person, so...
This is the first time a Kindle has ever entered my house. I hope you realize that. And we're going to have to get some sage and burn in the room, you know, after this, because I really, you know, not my thing. So I'm going to just read it.
Yeah.
Yes. This word, love. I will not go when she calls, even if she says, I love you, especially that. Even though she swears and promises nothing but love, love. The light in this room covers everything equally. Even my arm throws no shadow. It too is consumed with light. But this word love, this word grows dark, grows heavy, and shakes itself, begins to eat, to shudder, and convulse its way through this paper until we too have dimmed in its transparent throat and still are riven, are glistening, hip and thigh, your loosened hair which knows no hesitation.
That's quite a raunchy one, that.
Yes, it is. Very physical. And even saying, well, love, you think it's this effete entity which we have contrived to make happen, but it really has its own volition, its own appetite, and we're traveling on that appetite, and that's a great part of loving, and it's quite a nice sauce. And yeah, and Ray himself was very physical, really just delight in your presence and I had very long hair then, and that was his prize. He just loved my long hair. And he was always buying me hair combs. And now, of course, my hair is short now, so they're all rather useless, but I still keep them nostalgically around on my dresser just to remind me. But yeah, love for him was a very complex word. And there's a sense that he was always discovering new elements about what it was to love. And in one of his poems, he pretends to die. You know, he lies down by the river and tries to imagine just what it was like to be dead. And in the poem he writes about it, he says, then I remember you. And I got right back up and went on being happy. People who become alcoholics don't set out to become alcoholics. They, you know, just find it kind of creeping on them. And they're drinking at one level now, and then very soon they're drinking at another level and they really have to have it. And he said nobody starts out, I think I'll become an alcoholic, you know. It's not a life ambition, but so many people have that proclivity. And indeed, his grandfather was alcoholic and his father had been alcoholic. And so it was really a genetic predisposition to alcohol. And so he decided, I think his wife had gotten sober first, and I think that was good because it gave him a sign that it was possible to get sober. He brought himself down off alcohol just with these little shots of booze, like a hard liquor, maybe whiskey, I suppose. And you would have one shot, and then you would wait an hour, and you might have another. Then you would be 2 hours a shot, and 3 hours a shot. And then a day would pass, and you would not have any. And then the next day, you might have one. And you went like that until you weren't drinking.
He continued to use marijuana, is that right?
Well, now you have some very interesting sources. he did, you know. It was like his nerves, I think, had been protected so long by the dulling of alcohol, and he never smoked in company that I knew about. I mean, it was a sort of a end of day thing, and he would actually run around and unplug all the phones or take them off their hooks and let them go for a while, and then I never smoked marijuana with him. Of course, if you were in proximity, just when he blew out, you would get enough to be ceiling high, I suppose. He just liked to laugh, you know, and it was a particular kind of funny that came over him, you know, and just to be that certain kind of jolly, you know, and maybe we'd make some popcorn or, you know, it'd be something, some goodies. He loved chocolate, and everybody would give him chocolate. Oh, the worst thing you could do is come into the house and know that he had a stash of chocolate somewhere. This, the last book, A New Path to the Waterfall, his final book, we were together in the Northwest when he was finishing it. That was 1988. He died on August the 2nd. We had only been in that house for about 10 months, and a house that he had found kind of up towards the Olympic Mountain Range. And he thought he had a chance to at least finish a book of poems. And so that's what he was just working on those poems. And every day, you know, he would try to draft some poems. And during the day, I would be reading short stories and telling him some of these long Tolstoy stories or some Chekhov stories. And then he would go up and he would read these stories and then we'd chat about them. We were trying to love our days, and in fact, it worked. I mean, it's hard when you have death looking over your shoulders, and it's hard for people outside that to imagine that you actually could have these very intense, full, and productive days. But in fact, we did. We could still do everything that we'd love to do if we took that day as that day and just loved that day and did the things we loved in it. And so that's really, you know, a very big secret if people are having, you know, a cancer death where, you know, the outcome is not going to be what you want, but you still have the days that you do have, you know. And at one point I was saying, well, we could still do all this medicine. We could just fill up all the time with medicine. I said, but let's look at just these last poems and just see if we want to keep all of them, if the book is exactly how we want. What a great idea, he said. You know, so then we gave the book kind of a last look. And then we went salmon fishing in Alaska. That was kind of the treat at the end of the work. Of course, earlier we had gotten married, too. That was another thing where we just said, well, we're going to throw the clocks away. And we went to Reno. And on July the 17th, we got married in Reno. Justice of the Peace. It was one of those habla español also kind of places. And then we went gambling. And the crazy thing was that I just kept winning. It was kind of awful. I mean, it was awful because here I was, and you know, it was a dire time. But I was winning at roulette, and I could just feel this kind of sizzle, and uncanniness of knowing exactly what to do, and it was made you very, very jittery. And I can remember saying to Ray, "Well, look, I'm going to go back one more time because something's happening, and I have this feeling. Go on, babe, go on back." You know. So I went back, and I won, and I went and I collected all this money in cash, and I had money in one left hand and money in the right hand, and I went running across this big expanse of this gambling casino with this wads of money. And he said, "Well, the bus is about to leave. You know, we're going to catch our plane." And I said, "Forget about the bus. We're taking a taxi." We had enough money to take a taxi and more. He was not debilitated by that. That was one of the luck of the cancer, the lung cancer, that he, I suppose if you could talk about any idea of luck, but he really didn't have a lot of sickness. The cancer had gone to the brain, but we had been controlled with radiation. So it was really in his liver. It came back in the liver. And so that was really the hardest time, you know, when we came back. Well, we had to leave actually Alaska because he was in pain. And we came back to the hospital in Seattle. And then he had a procedure there, which didn't go well. And they did find, you know, a lot of involvement there. So the only thing to do was to come home. So I rented it was a white convertible with a red interior, I remember. And we just put the top down. We had his oxygen. He got in the car. I said, "We're going home." So we, and they thought that was the best thing there, too. He wanted to go home. And so we drove all the way back to the house that we had bought together on the Olympic Peninsula. And that's, you know, where he did die, and about 4 days later. And it was very uncanny that one of the poems he had written, he describes, "Kiss Me Again," you know, it was very moving goodbye in that poem. And that is exactly what happened at that night. It was just uncanny that we did actually kiss each other goodbye 3 times. And he died very peacefully. I was there, I had a friend with me, and I had just kind of collapsed from exhaustion. And my friend woke me, and he said, "I think Ray is passing." You know, and just, he did pass, and we just held each other. And he was, you know, getting out of consciousness at that point. But we had said our goodbyes when he was quite cogent. And after he passed, my friend said, "Well, I'm just going to go." I said, "Yes, just go and just let me be alone. Just let me be alone with him." Those poems kind of accompanied me and let me stay with Ray in another way. And I felt like I was able to cross over with him to some extent into that new place where he was. And then I was able to cross back into life. After that, through the poems. No need. I see an empty place at the table. Whose? Who else's? Who am I kidding? The boat's waiting. No need for oars or a wind. I've left the key in the same place. you know where. Remember me and all we did together. Now hold me tight. That's it. Kiss me hard on the lips. There. Now let me go, my dearest. Let me go. We shall not meet again in this life. So kiss me goodbye now. Here, kiss me again. Now, my dearest, let me go. It's time to be on the way.
Do you remember when he first showed that to you?
Yes, it was very, very shaking, you know, for me. You know, it's hard to be at that point where, you know, he's realizing that really there is going to be an ending and a definite parting. But it was also very, very beautiful, you know, that he could say to me, let me go. I have to go. It's time to be on the way. And you know, there at the end, I was even saying to him, I just don't know how I will make it, how I can possibly live past it, what's happening here, you know, live alone without you. And he just said to me very matter-of-factly, he just said, somebody has to stay here to take care of things. It was so matter-of-fact. And so I thought, yeah, he's right. I do. There is a lot to take care of. And there's the whole gift of his work and the work that I've done so far and the work yet to do. And this was the parting seal. And you do have to let your love go. You let the person go. You keep the love. You never let the love go. The love from that relationship, I would say, is my engine and has carried me ever since. I can never be outside love after Ray. Doesn't matter, you know. I have a very lovely love now with my companion, Josie Gray, but he's from a different generation. You know, he's going to be 90 in March of this coming year. And so raised in the generation where you really don't show the love. Also, Josie's not a verbal person. Ray was always expressing everything verbally. Aren't we having fun, babe? He'd say, you know, 10 times a day. That poem, Late Fragment, is such an amazing poem. Since Ray's death, and I wish he knew this, that it has been used in weddings. It has been used at funerals and memorials. So it can be used at either of those ends of the skein. You know, it's so strong that when I was going through chemo myself for breast cancer, I would give it to the nurses and I would say, please, please pass this poem along to everybody. I just want everybody to have this poem. And sometimes at my readings, I will say, who knows Ray's poem, Late Fragment? Somebody will shoot up a hand, and I will say, come and say it first, you know, and they'll get up and they'll say the poem. I'll say, Late Fragment. And did you get what you wanted from this life? Even so, I did. And what did you want? To feel myself beloved on the earth. Yeah, it's a great wish.
My mind always snags on the even so. I think it's there as a little...
I think that's actually the most... those are the two most important words in the whole poem, even so, because we all live with even so. That's what it is. It's the most human moment in the whole poem. Is that where we are all connected, because we all have an even so by the time, you know, the end of our lives. Everything is accomplished finally on the hinge of those two words, even so. In fact, it would be a great title for a book, wouldn't it? Even so.